This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to Good Things on the Bigger Picture, our show where we speak to good people doing good things, and I am Lim Soo Ann. Elizabeth Cardoza is a very familiar name in the field of heritage conservation after spending over two decades of lending her expertise to restoration projects and continuously raising awareness about the need to preserve our heritage. And, you know, if you are a listener of BFM, her voice would be very familiar to you as well across various programs, especially our I Love KL shows. So today she joins me on Good Things to talk about why heritage conservation means so much to her and where she sees Malaysia heading in preserving our heritage and history. Thank you so much for joining me today, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
Elizabeth, tell me about how all of this started for you. You know, how did you get into heritage conservation?
By accident.
As with most things,
a lot of things. Yeah, no, I've always sort of, you know, I trained in culture, I worked in culture, and I worked in really looking at mostly the performing arts, the visual arts, contemporary traditional work, etc. And that's kind of my background, training background interest. There were certain things that happened, and I was kind of looking for a change, and it happened to be that there was a position opening at Badan Warisan Malaysia, which was it's an NGO, working principally in the built environment. And so I was asked by one of the directors if I would just come in and interview for the job. And I hadn't done an interview for many, many years, so that was quite interesting. And I said, okay, I'll come and have a chat. I'm good at chats. And so I met with the then president, the late Tun Sri, at that time Tun Sri Ahmad Saji, Tun Ahmad Saji, who very sadly has left us because of COVID last year, but almost a year ago now. And we talked about everything except Badan Warisan. We talked about history, we talked about the country, we talked about culture, we talked about books, we didn't really talk about politics. But and then I thought, oh, well, you know, that's quite interesting. But there was really no mention of the organization or what it was. There was an assumption, I think, that I knew quite a lot about it, which I did. And had worked in my previous job, you know, in with the organization in different ways of supporting their work. And the next thing I know is, you know, in the evening I got a call and said, if you want the job, you've got the job. And I go, oh, okay, right, fine. So really by accident, it was quite a coincidence of timing, I suppose, you know. That's kind of how I got into it. And what happened actually was what I realized when I first joined it was that, I mean, two things. One was the issues were the same as, you know, in the cultural arena that I've been working in. It was just the vocabulary was different. The istilah was different because it was quite specific to the architecture and to architectural heritage and the built environment. The other thing I realized was they were really quite stuck on the physical, you know, as an organization. But I think that in Malaysia at that time, when you talked about heritage, it was about the physical structures,
The buildings and the sites.
The buildings themselves, not even the areas, not even the sites. I mean, sometimes you talk about old towns, but mostly it was about this was, and they were always the beauty queens, you know, the beautiful, the great, the wonderful, the monumental, the iconic, and people would, because a place that people would recognize. And so when you start sort of looking at other spaces and places, cultural places where you know, or social places where you are, schools, post offices, markets, you know, they're a little bit more ordinary perhaps, you know, you're more familiar with it and therefore you're more blasé and you don't really think of them as heritage. So I suppose part of my initial work was to try to sort of accommodate, but to also try to look at how do you broaden and widen this concept and this sphere of work within the heritage arena. So by accident.
So what was the moment then that you realized, you know, this is something that you want to do, you know, that this is something that's very important to you?
I don't think that there was a moment. I think it was sort of a building up of various things. But one pretty seminal, I suppose, incident that happened, and I must refer to my daughter, Sheila. When she was very young, and I had just joined Badan Warisan, she was maybe 6 or 7 years old, we drove past Puru Jail. Mm-hmm. At that time, the mural was still intact. The jail was no longer being used as a jail. I think there was some activity there. There was a detention centre, etc. But it was not a jail per se, right? They had moved the prisoners out. And she looked at this and she asked me what it was. And I told her, because she looked at the wall and she was totally fascinated by the fact that this 6-7-year-old child, you know, looking at this wall that didn't, the wall, the mural, I don't know whether you know or remember it, mm-hmm. but it was this, you know, idyllic scene, beaches, palm trees, you know, green, which totally belied what was inside, what you would imagine would be represented by a prison, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that you are constrained in a lot of ways, or whoever lives in there, you know, you are interred, you are not allowed that kind of freedom. And then you had this wall. And she was totally fascinated by that. And she said to me, what's going to happen to it? And I explained to her that it was, that there were plans to demolish it. And she turned to me and she said, Mom, you're going to save it, right? And many years later, when it was demolished, she said, you failed me.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was really quite... you kind of have to take a deep breath and you go, no, it wasn't me, it wasn't me. But so if a child could recognize the value of something like that, and really it was capturing an imagination, I think that to me was kind of one, you know, one of the points, I think, or quite a big point to saying, okay, right, if... You know, you can make something important, or you can see something important in this monument, which may not have the best history or the most beautiful. It's not a palace. It's mm-hmm. not, you know, it has a gritty underbelly.
Yep.
But you recognize the value of it, and you're 6 or 7 years old. And I think that there's some, you know, hope, I think, for heritage conservation in the future.
Hmm. So heritage, I mean, like you say, it's not just about the building. It's not just about what's pretty, but it's about the story behind there, right? It's not just about what's tangible, but the intangible as well. Do you find that we sufficiently account for the intangible part of history throughout, you know, your years of in this field?
It's never enough. You know, I think that people see, for the most part, something which is heritage is... for its beauty, for its glamour, for its nostalgia. Mm-hmm. So we kind of almost romanticize, you know, it. So back to Puru Jail, you know, you can't romanticize a jail. I mean, there's no. Absolutely no way you can. On the one hand, on the other hand, you just imagine the psychology behind the person who painted that mural. Single-handedly, you know, he painted that. And so what was going on through... You talk about, in a sense, I suppose, liberating. Mm-hmm. Your mind is still liberated, even if you're incarcerated, right, physically. And I think on the whole, if we look even at the way it's represented in stories, in the way people talk about places, in articles you read, it is very much about the physical structure, the physical environment. But, you know, the physical environment is a shell. I mean, really, at the end of the day, you know, it's what is inside of it that gives it its life, mm-hmm. that makes it important. It's how it was used, the people who have interacted with it, what happened, and all of that, those sets of stories which are intangible, which are so much part of the period marks and the, you know, in a sentence. I mean, if you just had a string of words and you didn't have your pauses, you know, it would mean very little. Oh, you could probably make some sense of it, but it'd take you some time. But when you start adding in, you know, the textures, the stories, the values, and that set of relationships, then the things come to life, I think, quite differently. And that should be emphasized. Not romanticized, mm-hmm. but... that part of it should be part of the story, and the legacy needs to be told, I think. It needs to be remembered.
You brought up nostalgia, Elizabeth. You know, what role do you see it playing? Because you tend to associate nostalgia with what's in the past, right? So where does that come in when we talk about heritage?
It's a good starting point.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good starting point because then you go, oh, I remember, you know, that kind of thing. And then there is an emotion that is attached to nostalgia, positive or negative, but there is an emotional attachment to it. And with that, if you didn't have that emotional attachment to your past, then it just is, you know, something which is really fairly abstract and so it's a so what moment, you know. So nostalgia is important. But if we want to look at the past with rose-tinted glasses, I mean, you know, then that doesn't work, because we have to remember that there are these layers and these textures, and it's not a monotonous landscape. It really is. And that's the thing about culture. You know, it gives you, it, you know, the topography is varied.
Mm-hmm.
And you need that. I mean, if you listen to music, I mean, you know, that it has its, you know, the crescendo doesn't work if it didn't have its quiet moments.
Mm-hmm.
So you do need to have that balance.
I'm speaking to Elizabeth Cardosa about her work in heritage conservation. And after a quick break, I'll be continuing this discussion and asking her about her most memorable projects and where she sees Malaysia heading in terms of heritage conservation. So keep it here on Good Things, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Good Things on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. In the studio with me today is Elizabeth Cardosa, heritage conservation expert and a familiar voice here on BFM Radio. And I'm speaking to Elizabeth on our segment where we speak to good people doing good things about her work in the field of heritage conservation. Now, Elizabeth, you know, in my research, I've seen names like Stadium Merdeka and the Masjid Diraja Sultan Sulaiman in Klang as well, being brought up as projects that you've worked on, right? And I'm sure there have been many across the years. So, you know, what have been some of your most memorable projects in your career?
I think every project, you know, has its significance. In the early 2000s, early in my time with Baden Warisan, we restored a building which was a late 18th century shop house, Dutch type, in terms of its look. Its facade was very, very modest. Everybody kind of looked at it and said, you know, why? What's so heritage about this?
Mm-hmm.
And actually, if you look at it, it is the earliest brick or the building, more not timber, shop house type in the country. But it's extremely modest. And by the investigation, within the research project process, you understand the origins, where it came from, its relationship to law in Holland, as opposed to, you know, I mean, that at that time, it was a Dutch colony.
Mm-hmm.
Malacca was a Dutch colony. And so the regulations, you know, mirrored that. And you try to understand the building, not for its modesty, but for its legacy, for its history, and for, in a way, being very much an early model from which, you know, what we have now. So it acts as a starting point. It acts as a contrast. You know, so something like that was extremely important. I mean, Stadium Merdeka was extremely important, because for that we actually had a bit of a battle, I would say. Not, you know, in the 1990s, the stadium was meant to be demolished.
Mm-hmm.
And the late Ahmad Saji was determined, actually, and found a way to make sure that the building was protected, both Stadium Merdeka and Stadium Negara. And one of the things we were able to do was to restore Stadium Merdeka back to its original 1957 form. And the reason why we went to that was because in the process of working on restoration of a building, we try to study and understand the significance of the building, the what makes this building or this site, this place significant, you know. And in the assessment, it was, yeah, it was used as obviously the place for the Declaration of Independence. And but it was very much, there was a stadium, so it was used as a sporting facility. But why was it built? And so the whole notion of it as a football facility was very important, and almost more important than that as a track and field, because mm-hmm. that came later in the 70s. And so when we were looking and trying to understand what to do and how to restore it and which period to restore it to, we really kept getting back into the fact that, well, you know, this was it, you know, this was where the nation started. And so we had to be able to reflect that. And we had a battle on our hands because the government didn't agree with us. A lot of academics didn't agree with us because they said we have to show the continuation of the many layers of history. But we argued that actually, yes, we are showing, we're keeping the many layers of history, and you can do that in many ways. But physically, we want to manifest it as its original intention, because that was where it started. And so after, it took, I think, you know, 2 years before we were able to, you know, and we managed to get the argument through, and we brought the stadium back to the scale of its original intention, you know, as you see it now. And that was, to me, was highly significant, because it was one of the things that we needed to, I mean, we challenged ourselves as well, you know, do we retain the upper tiers? But the upper tiers were in, physically, they were in really very poor engineering condition. And so there were cost factors, there were also size factors, there were factors related to what else was going around in KL, and how do you develop the fact that Bukit Jalil was around, and you know, you have these mega stadium there. Mm-hmm. You know, do you then build a stadium to challenge that, or you know? So these were all sorts of questions that we looked at, and that was, you know, the outcome of that was not simple. It wasn't an easy path. It was not an easy fix. And, you know, we restored it back, and we reinstated things that had been removed, demolished. But we also added new things. We added a new toilet block. We added a lift in the grandstand. And we reversed some of the processes and some of the new accretions. But we were able to then bring it back so people can look at it and say, I remember if I was there when I was there in 1957, or I remember when I was there at this football event, or I remember. And I think that part of it, if you talk about nostalgia, it's about memory, it's about legacy. And you mentioned the mosque in Klang. I mean, that was another challenge, different kind of challenge. But it was, it as a building, what had been covered was a lot of the bas relief, which was very, very colourful, very beautiful bas relief painted, in which were decorative elements in the mosque, and had been covered because it was seen as, you know, a mosque has to be really quite somber in a sense, it's a sacred place. But Sultan Sulaiman, who commissioned the mosque to people, I mean, he was very much, he was very religious, and he was a religious leader. And for him, that was part of his legacy. Mm-hmm. And so we were able to work with the mosque authorities, with the Selangor Jais, with the Islamic Department, and with the Sultan's office, to reinstate that. And so, you know, so for every project, there are always good memories. There are always quarrels and fights, and they're always, and it's not romantic. I mean, these are building sites, you know, when you go into, you're dirty and dusty, and, you know, it's hot, and it's hard work. Yes, it's hard work. It's actually physically hard work. It's not beautiful, wonderful conditions. But it's worth it, I think, at the end of the day when you see the results.
What this really highlights to me is that is how much work goes into it. I think sometimes you underestimate, because for someone who sees it from the outside, right, you see, oh, an old derelict building, and then a few years later you see one that's brand new almost, but you don't realise how much work and how much detail goes into it. Because what I found interesting with how you mentioned about Stadium Merdeka, for example, how you need to think about which year to restore it to, because it has changed over the years. And so your restoration process also has to take that into account.
Yeah, I think that's really when we start talking about values. You know, how do you assess values? And really, there is a lot of research that goes into that, a lot of talking with people, a lot of not just conversations, but really in terms of looking at historical documentation. Because at the end of the day, if we are looking at restoration, especially of more monumental buildings, which are monumental to the nation, let's say, or monumental to a state or a place, or a community, we have to take their values into consideration. We have to take into consideration the needs, not just the needs of what they have now, contemporary needs. And that has to definitely be taken into consideration, because that's, like I say, we put in, you know, access, barrier-free access. We had to take those things into in terms of the design. So you are inserting new things into a place, but you have to insert them in this insertion. It's not just, you know, I plonk it here anywhere, you know, because it's easy, it's convenient. Let's, you know, we actually have to identify where can we add something because it's needed, but which it doesn't detract away from the original intention, the integrity of that place. And that's kind of something that we need to look at. And it takes time and it takes discussion and it is a process. And yes, you're right. I mean, unless you're sort of roll up your sleeves and, you know, you're able to do this and you're able to have agree, you know, to that decision, because we try to build consensus before we actually do any. If not, somebody's just going to go in there and change it immediately after you've left. So if you build consensus, if you use the time almost to build this relationship of whoever is new to the place with it, you know, and who then get involved with you in that process, they bring you along and you bring them along with this place. And so you kind of have, you develop new memories.
And that to me sounds like a far more sustainable way of doing this, because you involve people and people carry that with them, and you make sure that your work doesn't just stop there when the project ends. If we think about the flip side, the more negative ones, and, you know, Malaysia has no shortage of these, unfortunately, what do you think are some missed opportunities or significant losses that we've had to our heritage?
Oh, some, many. I think the losses are always because it's a knee-jerk reaction. You know, it's like, there are two. One is that, oh, well, you know, we didn't understand it. We don't care really. And so let's get rid of it. Because we can, very often, it's really, what can I make in terms of how much money, how much profit can I make immediately? And that really is almost, so it's about me. It's about what I can get. I could be a company. I could be an individual. But how can I benefit, as opposed to how can this benefit my community, my family, toward the future? And really, heritage and the conservation of heritage is not just about preserving the past for the sake of it. It is about understanding what is important to you, and you could be you the individual, or you could be you, you know, a family. You could be you a community, a kampung, a village, a town, or you could be you a state or a nation, or in the case of World Heritage, the world, you know, it has these universal values. To understand that set of values and to appreciate that set of values, and once you know that, you then know what can be done, should be done, what should be kept, what can be changed. Because when you do restoration of buildings, it is about change. You are, you know, when you rehabilitate something, you need to make it work, sustainable. You are talking about sustainability as if, I mean, not you, but, you know, a lot of people talk about sustainability. It must be green. It must be, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But we actually also have to understand that people, once you have an attachment to a place, you're much more likely to want to retain it. And so when we talk about, you know, heritage and keeping our past, what is our past? Our past is something that is important to us, that we have a memory of, that we have an attachment to, that is part of our legacy, that we feel is important enough for us, that the next generation and the generation after that, that it has a value to them as well. And so we really need to drill down to that set of core values. And once we have that, then yes, I mean that. And sometimes they can be very modest and they can be individual. You know, why do you want to keep your little kampong house, that kind of thing, as opposed to gentrify it and sell it and then or take parts of it. Take a window, take a door, you know, and then you might want to do that because you can't keep it. And that's fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
But you might also want to retain it in different ways. And so you want to have something physical, likely, because that becomes part of your inheritance. Yeah. And something you can push and you can hand down. But it also is something that if you had it in your family for a long time, you do want to keep it. And because it's important enough, because it carries the stories that we were talking about earlier, and that those sets of stories are what make us what we are today. And I think we need to remember that. It's not about, like I say, things being beautiful or pretty or whatever. It is about, you know, the relationships that were brokered, the heartaches and the joys that come along with that.
It's really hard to talk about, you know, why we've done what we've done in terms of what we lost, because a lot of these things can't come back, right? Once you've demolished a building,
absolutely,
there's no turning back from that. And every time I come across articles, you know, listing down heritage buildings, places, schools, regular buildings that have so many memories but have been demolished for a new development, that's always really heartbreaking to read because you can now only see it in pictures.
Sometimes, you know, when something is demolished and something new is built in its place, if what is new that is built, you know, is actually a good building, mm-hmm. you know, and provides good facilities for whatever the new need is, that's fine. But sometimes I say, do we need another shopping mall in KL? You know, like we need a hole in the head. it's you know, what purpose does it serve? And I think that we really do need to look not just at the so-called bottom line, you know, mm-hmm. how much profit can we make? But the relationship of what you're removing, what you're demolishing, and yes, absolutely, I'll tell you that I am completely of the view that the value of heritage, for the most part, is only understood or seen in its absence. So you only remember it and it's like, what's happened? Where's it gone, you know? And then all your memories and the legacy of it, you know, and its meaning to you individually or you as a community come back. But then, as you said, it's gone and there's no, you can make a replica, but that's exactly what it is. It's a replica and it doesn't have it. So it's not, it's kind of like it's Disneyland, mm-hmm. you know, nothing wrong with Disneyland. I mean, you can have a great time there, but it's not. Really, that it doesn't have that. It doesn't carry that weight.
We'll go for another quick break, Elizabeth, and continue this conversation when we come back. Joining me today is Elizabeth Cardosa, heritage conservation expert, sharing what it's been like for her to work in this field and the highlights of her career thus far. After the break, I'll ask Elizabeth about her thoughts on progress versus heritage. So keep it here on Good Things, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Good Things with me, Lim Soo Ann, the show where we speak to good people doing good things. Today, I'm speaking to Elizabeth Cardosa, a heritage conservation expert, and her years of work and experience in the field. Elizabeth, you know, Malaysia has seen so much development and progress happening across the country, but especially in KL, in the big cities as well, in the past few decades, you know. And a lot of people still think that progress is at odds with heritage. But what do you see?
I see that if everything was brand new, then you wouldn't know, you wouldn't appreciate even what was there. Because it's really understanding the contrast. If you see, you know, a modest row of two-story shop houses which were built in the maybe the early 20th century, and you look at the technology of its time, and then you see something which is, you know, a much larger, taller building, and you look at that and you understand practices. So, for example, you see, you know, streets with shop houses on them in a commercial area, and then you go into a shopping mall, which also provides for, you know, and you understand, you know, how life has changed and how society navigates, you know, our world. Because, you know, you used to have to go to a wet market. Now you can do your wet market shopping in a mall at 10 o'clock at night. You used to have to go to a wet market in the mornings because that was when. And that really has to do with the way in which not just our lives have changed, but also in technology, you know, and how it has supported us in terms of lifestyle. And it's not just the small, the big cities. It is about the small towns as well. And what is it that I think, you know, we need to understand, I feel, what we want? Because how do we know what is important if we have nothing to assess it by, to contrast it by? It's a story I've told before. I'm not sure whether on BFM, but you look at the Sultan Abdul Samad building in town, the clock tower building. And the clock tower, 140 feet in the air, built with bamboo scaffolding, bricks to be carried up, no cranes, no. Imagine that, you know, 4 million bricks, you know, had to be made, you know, and as they're made, then they're sent to the building. So you have a kiln or kilns. So you imagine the whole industry, right? Because it was Kuala Lumpur at that time was, you know, the muddy confluence. And you have this immense building coming up here, kind of like almost talk about fairy tales, right? You know, this really quite amazing building, 1895, 1896. And then 100 years later, you have the Petronas Twin Towers coming up. And anybody who was, you know, around in KL at that time will remember sort of watching the race between the two towers, which was coming up. You know, when one was stopped, it was. And you're watching this monument come up, you know, 80-odd stories high in the air compared with something which, you know, would be the equivalent of maybe five stories, you know, six stories maybe, the clock tower. But they're both monuments. They're 100 years apart. Technology is quite different. But they are absolutely statement buildings. And one was a statement building, you know, by the British representatives here saying, look at us, we are here to stay. And the other was by the then Prime Minister saying, look at us, we are here to stay. Don't discount us, you know. And they have the same, in a sense, you know, ethos, you know, and more, you know, impetus behind them in terms of statements. They remain icons. Imagine if the Sultan Abdul Samad building wasn't there. You would, that part of the story would be lost, and you don't see the technology of that time. And people look at it and say, well, yeah, you know, we could do so much more with that site, you know. But actually, could you? Yes, you could. Physically, you could build something more monumental there, higher, you know, amortize on your land value. But what would you lose? You would lose so much that story of that history of a nation, of a nascent city, and its population, and the achievements, I think, of the people of that time versus what we can do today, you know, 118-story towers, you know.
So where do we go from here, right? We struggle to maintain that balance between the old and the new, to put it very simply. You know, there's always seemingly that dichotomy. But from what you see, do you think we can continue to find that balance between maintaining and preserving our heritage, but also coming up with new heritage?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, heritage is not something that doesn't, you know, develop. When you say, if you go back to understanding the word heritage as something which is important to you, mm-hmm. your community, mm-hmm. That you know is valuable for the next generation and generation after that and into the future, then yes, certainly. But I'll just, where do we go from here? Well, when I first joined Badham Morrison, if you look at just monitoring newspapers or radio stations, just that and television, anything to do with heritage, you know, that, and it was mainly the built environment, people saw culture quite different. Oh, you know, we can do a traditional dance or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that was seen sort of as different, a different arena. Nowadays, we see them actually as one arena of culture, you know. But you would maybe find 3 or 4 or 5 pieces, if you're lucky, in a week that would talk about heritage, mm-hmm. use that word, heritage or warisan. And it was mainly sort of, you know, fairly much in the ethos of past, a bit regret, a bit, you know, all that, or beauty queen, you know. And then think about it, even a decade ago, in the 2010, and the radio, the television, there were so many more programs. And then think about it today. It's on the tip of everybody's tongue. So that has changed. Mm-hmm. I think there is certainly a much bigger, more robust awareness. I don't think that there's necessarily the depth of the awareness, so it's broadened. There is, and in certain places, in certain cities, and you talk about the Georgetowns and the Malaccas of the world, there is very much a sense of that and understanding of that. Not necessarily there in KL. And you see it celebrated, I think, in the rather innumerable murals that we find around our cities, you know, and townships, that play on this idea of the past, but really very much as a romantic idea. And I think that we need to sort of recognize that it's not just romantic, it's not just nostalgic, because then you just keep it as a photo, as a memory. You know, it has to be real. I think as a society, we have to learn to, we have to remember and to learn and to understand better ourselves the values of that these places have embedded in them. And those memories. And I think that that's something that's really important.
Would you say then we struggle with communication when it comes to cultural preservation, heritage preservation, right? That we don't communicate well enough what it means?
Yeah, probably we don't communicate. Not so much we don't communicate. We talk to each other, you know. You agree with me, I agree with you, you know. So we kind of stay in our little patches, you know, mm-hmm. Because it's a really challenging time. You know, I said even when we were restoring Stadium Merdeka, I mean, that was, you know, 2007 when we first started the restoration of Stadium Merdeka. You know, that wasn't many years ago, you know, 15 years ago. We struggled to get that understanding of looking at and understanding the significance of... And we said, you know, look, it's called Stadium Merdeka, right? You know, how much more can we... You know, it has to be of its most, you know, importance. That really is where things started for the nation. And yes, it has very much that sports. It has very much that community feel. And it's right at that time. It was on kind of like on the edge of the city. It was next to the city. It was something that was... Now it's sort of, you know, the city centres move, the city centres grow. And so you're looking at it and saying, well, you know, should it be here? Do we need a stadium in the middle of the city? Well, you know, like, do we need a jail in the middle of the city? Well, kind of like the city grew into it, as opposed to it purposely came and it plonked itself there. It was there before you. So it is about respect. Mm-hmm. it is about understanding and respecting our past. Respecting whether we made mistakes or not, that's how we learn. And I think that that's really the conversation that we need to talk about heritage in, not in this romantic, nostalgic, wouldn't it be nice if, you know, which is good. It's good to have that because it's a good introduction. It's a feel-good factor. But to actually try to make it relevant, we also need to upgrade certain facilities. We do need to not be, there are things which are of extreme importance, of very high value. We don't change that because we abide by certain principles. But there are other things that can be changed because, like I said, you can add a lift in to, because you need to, because, you know, we're talking about aging populations, we're talking about universal access, we're talking about all of the rules and regulations, laws change, you know, and we have to accommodate that. Mm-hmm. But we then need to do it intelligently. I think we need to do it with an open mind, and we need to do it with discussion and almost building consensus. So there's a lot of work to be done.
So what keeps you going then, Elizabeth?
Sometimes, yeah, like I'm holding a gun to my own head, right? What keeps me going? Because I think it's important, because I think that we really need to. If we don't have that, for me, it's like, you know, put yourself in a cave and just, you know, shut the door. because culture is so much part of our identity, part of what we are individually. And I think it isn't about, you know, this whole, we are not the same as the next. And if you remove all of the older, so like I say, if you take away the Sultan Abdul Samad building or all of the old buildings, the old shop houses, and you only have a modern landscape, mm-hmm. a skyscape, let's say, and you put one skyscape against the next skyscape in another city around the world, they'll all look the same. So what gives us our unique identity? You know, people talk about USPs and things like, well, yes, exactly. What makes us different? And yet what makes us the same? So really, how do we navigate that? And I think that that's what keeps me going, because we are unique. Mm-hmm. As much as we are part of a global culture. And, you know, talking on the radio, it goes, you know, airwaves just go anywhere and everywhere, right? It's really very important for us to be able to share, because there are common values and there are common principles. But we can manifest it differently. And that's really the cultural distinction is there. And I think that that's what makes our landscapes, our culture, anybody's culture interesting, because it's different and we can learn something, you know, and we can share things. It just makes life more interesting, I think.
You know, sometimes there are a lot of people who think about these things, who talk about these, but don't know where to start. You know, you feel like it's just sort of something that people in the field will get round to it, right? But what would your message be to fellow Malaysians who, you know, think that this is something important, but don't know what to do?
I think start with yourself, what's important to you. Start with understanding that. And then you look at your neighbourhood, what's important. So, for example, I will say that, you know, look at your own house, and what is it about your house that you appreciate and that you value? And I'll just get on a personal level. I live in an old house. I mean, it 1960s, and we bought it for very specific purposes, reasons, and I won't get into that. But when we needed to do some upgrading and refurbishment and do new loos, and, you know, I mean, just basically, you know, sort out the wiring and, you know, stuff like that you need to do for safety mm-hmm. reasons as well. We could have brought it down and then rebuilt, but it is, talk about a waste of resources. All the resources that went, all the energy that went into the original building, that you had the time, the energy. And if you demolish it, you know, most people only look at the demolition costs. Nobody looks at the loss of the 50 years before that, all the energy, all the effort, all the memory that went into that. And that's not something you can count, you know. And So when we were doing that, it was like, no, we're going to retain this building as it is. We're going to be able to expand, extend it in a way, extend the life of it because we're upgrading it. And that's what you want to do, maintain it and upgrade it to meet your current needs. But so you start with yourself. You start looking at what you have and not to be precious. But if you can really begin by analyzing what is it about your family, what is it about your legacy of your place, of your space, I think that that's one thing. The other thing is you know, there's so many opportunities. There are museums that are looking for help. There are ways of sort of like, you know, Facebook is one opportunity where you can learn, mm-hmm. almost educate yourself, you know, and you go in and see exhibitions. I mean, talk to people, read. Even if you are reading online, read and see what is going on around you. And I think that when you walk, open your eyes. Don't just think about I'm going from point A to point B, but what is it along the point A to point B that I can see and appreciate? What was there? Because there are new things and there are old things there. And if something is there that is old, maybe, you know, don't dismiss it. No, it's old. Let's forget about it. Or it's old. Oh, we must be precious about it. No. Let's try to understand that these are the contrasts I think that we need. It's not a monotonous landscape that we live in, mm-hmm. a cultural scape. We should actually really embrace the differences.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Elizabeth.
Not at all. Pleasure.
It's been my pleasure as well. I've been speaking to Elizabeth Cardosa, Heritage Conservation Expert, on our weekly segment of Good Things, where we speak to good people doing good things. If you missed any part of today's show or any previous Good Things episodes, you can download our podcast on bfm.my or on the BFM app. I'm Lim Suan, and this has been Good Things, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.